Today, I'm welcoming on to Radio Gorgeous an actress that was born in Australia to English parents. She trained at the Royal Central School of Speech and Drama. She has had a long history in the theatre with writer and director Stephen Berkoff, and the plays with him include Greek Decadence, East, The Trial and Metamorphosis. Stephen has described her as his muse. She's been in many plays, films, and TV. You may remember her as the matriarch Sylvie Carter in EastEnders. She is Linda Marlowe, and Linda is putting on a show very soon, which we can all watch online, the miracles of technology. It's called Berkoff's Women, and it's directed by the comedian Josie Lawrence. Hi, welcome to Radio Gorgeous. It's lovely to have you on today.
It's lovely to be here.
Oh, an absolute pleasure. So tell us about the show. What should we expect, Linda?
Well, I'll start by saying that it's a show that I, after my many years working with Stephen, I then decided to do my first solo show. And I thought that it would be very nice to do some of the monologues from the works of Stephen, the plays that some of them I've been in and some not. And some of the monologues are in plays that I actually did perform, and some, again, are not. So I'm playing a part which I didn't play, but obviously knew the play very well. So it was my first stab at sort of trying to sort of do something. Well, actually, it's not quite true, because back in the 70s, I started a rock group with three other girls. But it was this was a sort of a new stab of being able to be in control of your own work and do it. And it was a huge success at Edinburgh, and therefore I toured the world with the show because of the British Council being on their showcase. They liked the show, so it went round the world. And it's a very bizarre thing, but that's 21 years ago, but I have always done this show at least once in a year for 21 years. There's always been somebody like Holt Festival or Isle of Wight Festival who says, oh, would you do that show? So I've always known it. And then when I was asked,
when you were asked?
When I was asked whether I would like, it was through a friend of mine who said, I'd love you to meet Gillian Hardy because she is a wonderful actress and a wonderful person. She hosts this online streaming thing, and I'm sure she would love to meet you and you would love to meet her, which we did. We've never actually met except on... By seeing her by on the telephone so far, but and obviously countless emails, but I feel like I know her inside out now. And see, I suggested Berkoff's Women because I know it, and I did it in February, and it was, you know, anyway, that was the beginning of a very hard thing, a hard journey filming it, because there are so many things that you don't realize, that it is so hard to do a solo show without an audience, mainly because it is the audience that gee you up. They are the people, even if they're not laughing at funny things, they're sort of there helping you. And to do it just in an empty theater, which I chose to do rather than film it somewhere where you just then are screening into somebody's house, that I did it in a theatre, and Stephen Levy, who is a good friend of mine who runs the Charing Cross Theatre, well, he owns it, he gave it to me to do it in. But then there's all sorts of things like the fans from lights that are on the side of the stage, and I've done lots of leading roles and plays there, and I've noticed it, but when you've got a full audience and other people in the play, you don't notice it so much. So the very first filming of it, I did that, and I thought, oh my goodness me, there's a noise going all the way through it, a real buzz, and I felt I was going far too fast, like motor mouth. So I did it again. We filmed it again. So and then I calmed down and hopefully did it at the right speed. But it was a hard journey to do it, but I'm so thrilled that I have, and I hope people will enjoy it. I mean, you know, it is literally a show that Josie helped me, you know, put it together. And she was my director, so that was really
important. Josie has been your director for the last 21 years then?
Well, she's my friend, so she directed it. We haven't changed it in that 21 years, so she did the first directing of it. And she's seen it from time to time, but she, you know, that's when she did. But because we're still completely in touch, she is the director and Stephen the writer. But it was...
So being a comedian...
We put it together.
It's brilliant. So being a comedian, tell us of the comedic moments. What moments are there in it? Can we expect?
Oh yes, no, there's some really fun. That is what's hard to do it without an audience. Because yes, no, there are some very funny things. Some of it's drama, some of it's very moving. I mean, some of his monologues, and some of them are meant to be very funny and indeed do get laughed at by an audience. When you don't have an audience, you suddenly, I think, feel a little lonely. And it's just, hopefully that won't show in the way I've done it, because I've now done it twice to sort of get used to the idea. But it was hard to do that, because theatre is theatre. And if it's built for theatre, then it sort of works. Otherwise, with film, I mean, you might do it in a completely different way and sort of, you know, put sort of don't do it in a theatre, and you could, I'm not sure this show would work to do it in a different way, because they're monologues. But if it was life story or something like that, then you could film it in a way where you might be, you know, you'd have different locations, and it would be a totally different thing. It would be a film rather than a theatre piece. But because I've done it in an empty theatre, we showed the empty theatre. We showed me running through the empty theatre at the beginning onto the stage, because my first line sort of is that's what I used to do in the theatre. And my first line was, "How sweet of you to come on time, bastards." So it sort of was apt to do it. And then you see the empty theatre with the credits going up at the end. So everybody knows that I'm doing it in an empty theatre. So it's
terribly interesting what you said about rushing through it, because I suppose the audience give an energy, and they give you room to pause, they give you room to, you're waiting for the laughter, all those moments that sort of slow you down, because they are, as you say, it is a two-way thing on stage, even if it's, you know, a large theatre with an audience you're quite far away.
Well, that is exactly it. You've spot on what you've said. That is exactly why it was suddenly a very lonely experience, even though I had three people filming it. And I did have my lovely Dan Jones, who does the technical side and sort of runs the show. But that was why I was going too fast, because suddenly there were, it doesn't matter if they're not laughing, but they're sort of sharing it with you, and you sort of give breath to it, because you just waiting for their reactions. But when they're not there, you don't. So I had to go back home, absolutely sort of go through it a few times for a few days before refilming it, and sort of really get it into my psyche that I mustn't rush, that, because I watched myself and I thought, Linda, stop, you could have put a breath in before you said that line. You're ruining it. And I was having this dialogue with myself. So I mean, it's been a really hard journey to do it like this. But then I did slow down, and then I got my dear daughter-in-law, who's an actress, to come and watch it. She's seen it many times, and she said it was a joy to see it again. And she was at 9 o'clock in the morning. She sat on the floor in my top room where I am now and watched it. And she said, "You're not going too fast. I promise you, you're not." So I had, you know, I actually did it for her without, you know, just without the music.
You thought of her when you were doing it. Yeah, she was. Yes. She was the person you're performing for on stage.
Well, exactly, absolutely.
Yeah. So, tell us about Josie Lawrence is a friend of yours. Lucky you. Josie Lawrence is a brilliant comedian, and she's had a very successful career. What did she bring to the direction that you wouldn't have thought of yourself?
Well, for example, one of the things that she brought, I mean, she's a dear friend of mine, and we worked together with Albert Finney many years ago. That's how we met. I was playing her, she was my stepdaughter-in-law, and we became really, really good friends all of that time, you know, but before that. And I asked her to, there is a speech from his Greek, which is his version of
Don't worry.
My brain is gone.
Yeah,
well, anyway, the Sphinx is in it.
Yeah.
And in the play, the Sphinx was played as a kind of animal. Who are you, little man? Pipsqueak, scum, drip off the prick. But was played like an animal. And so I just, when I did my first sort of getting it together, I got down on my hands and knees, and I decided to do exactly. And I hadn't played that part. I played the Jocasta part. So it's about Oedipus and Jocasta, and I played her part. And so therefore, I thought, oh, well, I'm playing this now. I always wanted to do it, that particular part. They're both wonderful parts. So basically, Josie said, but listen, this is a solo show. You can't really, they're going to wonder what you're doing, because it's not part of the whole play and it won't make any sense. She says, this is a brilliant feminist speech written by Stephen, and it is unbelievably a feminist speech. And she said, you should do it as a stand-up, as talking to the audience and challenging and having interaction. So I had, that was one of the things that I really missed doing it on film, because I actually was addressing real people. I walked into the audience and I would sort of go up to one and say, who are you, little man? What do you know? And sort of have a dialogue with them. And there were various places within the speech that I did that. And they laughed, and there was a lot of, you know, joining forth with the audience with that. But she was absolutely right to do it that way, because it is, you know, if you're playing some sort of weird animal, people think, well, what does that come out of? But when you're actually talking to people, and he's written it so brilliantly, and it is so much from, you know, a woman's perspective about how she feels about, you know, liberating herself. And it is a joyful one. And I mean, sometimes when I do it live on stage, when it finishes, I always just put an aside in and say, a man wrote that. But I haven't put it in the film, but I've told Stephen that I do say that sometimes.
So Stephen Bergman,
so that was an example of her with the comedy and humor, and also,
yes,
you know,
she changed it. She changed what you know. She was a director, brilliant. So
yes.
Stephen Berkoff, I mean, I know him very well, like from the 80s and 90s. He's very intense. He's very dramatic. He's very full on. I mean, does his work respond well to your personality?
Oh, very much so. Yes. Now, I loved working with him. I mean, it was tough. The first time I worked with him, I thought, I can't go through with this. We met because I was looking for physical theatre, and I'd been acting for 10 years by that time. And somebody introduced me to him, and he was the only one doing the kind of physical theatre in England at that time. And he said, well, do you want to come and do something in our company? And he'd seen me in a play which he liked. So eventually I did. But then, of course, he doesn't. He was like, I was the whipping boy in a way, because even though, I had never worked with him, and everybody else in it had worked with him, we were doing The Trial by Kafka. So therefore, it was a journey, it was a nightmare in some ways. And I suddenly thought, but you don't need me, you don't want me, I'm not obviously doing right. What is, no, yeah, I do. And anyway, he forced me to stay in it. And then for a little while after that, I then, with two of the other actresses that were in his company, we formed a pre-punk feminist rock group called the Sadista Sisters. And so we were really quite successful. So that was 3.5 years that I was sort of touring, you know, abroad and touring England with a rock group, a rock group.
So you can sing as well, Linda, can you?
Well, no, I'm not very well, but I wasn't the main singer. I can speak. I actually do one of the numbers in another solo show of mine, because that's an autobiographical one about fear and all the different things that I've done. That's coming up. That I was supposed to be doing. One of the reasons I'm doing this now is because I was supposed to be doing that at Hoxton Hall in September, but because of everything that's happened, it's had to be delayed till next year. So I will do it then. But I can put a song across. I can speak sing. So, I can sing a little bit.
Well, that's belting, isn't it? You're doing, that's actually show tunes. A lot of them are speak singing, aren't they? That's how.
Well, they are indeed. Absolutely. But there were so many things. We dressed up in different costumes and everything. And, we were quite sort of before our time as a girl group. And then I went back to working with Stephen, funnily enough, because he said, well, now will you come and work with me? So the next thing I did was Gertrude in Hamlet that he did, and then there was a sit then, and lots and lots of other plays, and Decadence, which is the one that he wrote specially for us to do, which is I've got quite a few monologues from, there's more than one monologue from Decadence in the show in Berkoff's Women in my compilation. So it's lovely to still be doing these, you know, playing these parts. And then some of them, like Sylve, you know, there's an ancient woman here now playing Sylve, who's meant to be a young girl, but that's okay because it's theatre, isn't it? And that monologue, that's from East, that one.
Now, you just touched on your one-woman show that was sadly cancelled because of COVID. It is called One Woman Show No Fear. Is this different than the show?
No, it's just called No Fear, the show, but it is a one woman show. It's done as One Woman No Fear.
Yes, it was on the
It is a one woman show. I actually did it. I went around the world. That was my other most successful show. Berkoff's Women and No Fear were the two that really appealed to so many countries: South America, India, Australia, New Zealand. I mean, I went all over the place. The Philippines, Hong Kong.
What's that about, No Fear?
Well, No Fear is it was, we decided that it would be a show. When I was quite wild in the 70s, and I did some kind of crazy things like smuggle 9 kilos of hash to America strapped around my body. I shouldn't be saying this, should I? But anyway, I could always deny it.
Allegedly.
People used to say to me, but that wasn't true, was it? And I said, everything is true. And then an illegal divorce from my husband, my first husband, because we just wanted to get divorced. So I acted as my own correspondent and then went into court and divorced myself. Well, that could be perjury. So there were things like that, but there were also things like the birth of my second child. And Josie wrote that particular monologue in it, which was, it's beautiful. It was all in rhyme and it was funny and very poignant about me listening to, it's called Breathe. And I got so frightened because it was like 18 years after my other child. So, you know, it was a bit of a long, long gap, that he wasn't going to breathe if I didn't look at him every night and go to bed. And my husband at the time was saying, come to bed, he's going to be fine. And I didn't. And the whole poem is about the night of the birth and Harry needing to have somewhere to take his dog before he came. I said, but my waters are broken, never mind about the dog. But she's written it all in rhyme, and that is a very beautiful thing. So there's different aspects, you know, where I met Marilyn Monroe as a young actress who was doing a film test out of Pinewood. I pretended I was 17 or 18. And I didn't get the part in the end because I was too young, but they did give me a film test with Alan Bates and David McCallum. David McCallum did his one with me and Alan Bates did, but anyway, they got the part and Alan Bates and I didn't. But she was filming the Prince and the Showgirl.
The Showgirl, yeah.
And they said, they weren't quite ready to do the test. We'd got into makeup and everything. They said, would you like to come and watch them filming the balcony scene?
Yeah.
So I watched Laurence Olivier and Marilyn Monroe doing the balcony scene. And then I met her briefly to say hello to her. She was a great heroine of mine. It's amazing how much even young women sort of look up to Marilyn Monroe.
And I'd say as a young person, she was my idol as well.
Very, it's funny that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because she probably wouldn't be now, but she was then.
Yeah.
Not for any really bad
reason. I'm interested to know, because it was famous. I've read the book about it. I've seen the film. I've seen the other film made about Prince and the Showgirl. I'm intrigued to know, because apparently Larry couldn't bear Marilyn because she was so natural and he was the opposite. Well, tell me, what was the truth?
He couldn't bear her and he blamed her for lots. Oh my God, the sun's shining now. Oh no, that's right, it doesn't matter because I'm not on thing. There's a blast of sunshine. No, he was horrible to her. And she walked off with it, really, because she did know about film. I mean, Laurence Olivier was a brilliant, brilliant actor. But it's interesting that even with Vivian Leigh, she was a great film star. And so was Marilyn Monroe. But he was a great theatre actor. I mean, obviously, he did lots of films, too. But no, he just didn't. He I think he found her very difficult to work with.
Yeah. But also, the thing is that she comes alive, but is very natural on screen and is very subtle. And we know he isn't. Could you see that during the filming or not?
Absolutely, I could actually, even in when she was doing it, when she came out, and they had to do it over and over. I mean, we didn't see all of it because it seemed to be like all day they were doing that scene. But you know, when she came out onto the balcony, then there were so many takes of it, and you know, obviously that it wasn't quite right, or she just stopped and that was not quite right for her and him. But I did notice that he was still doing his kind of his stage acting, and she was like just being. Yes, it did come across very much so. And then
now,
I saw
Linda,
the film eventually.
Linda, you're a feminist, so you'll be cool about this. But I know that you've reached a very important birthday this year, and you've got to share with us you really are, because you're amazing.
Well, it's good they can't see me right now. I can just see under my chin. It's terrible when you look
at that. Very tall still.
I'm looking at you. You look much better than I do. But there we are. I'm 80.
Way!
I am 80, and I was going to have a big party, but I didn't, but actually I said to my son, my younger son, who's 18 years younger than the older one, he said, no, but I bought the gazebo and everything, we're going to have a party next year. I said, we don't need to have it. He said, we're going to have it next year. But it's, so anyway, we just had a
damn
party
right
gathering.
Damn right,
yes.
Right.
He's determined we should have the party next year.
Got to keep celebrating. Well, what does it
feel
like?
I can't believe I'm 80.
I'm 57, and I feel like I'm getting a bit older. What does it feel like being 80? Do you feel any different?
No, I mean, this is the problem. I mean, I say problem, is it? I feel like, I don't feel I look like it when I look in the mirror, but in terms of energy and what I want to do and who I am, I don't feel any different than in my 30s or 40s. I don't feel physically different. And that's, I mean, I know I am, but I don't, it doesn't occur to me that I am. And I find that really disconcerting at times. I think,
how can I be 80? Why you still feel young, because you haven't sort of tapped into it. You've carried on being you. Do you have an exercise regime? Do you look after yourself?
Yes, I do. I've been doing Pilates for 35 years. I actually trained as a ballerina, as a ballet dancer. I didn't want to be an actress, and it wasn't until I was nearly 17 that I realised I wasn't going to be good enough. I went to ballet schools from the age of 10, and so therefore all of that physical, but that has kept my muscles in my legs and my arms, and they have stayed for all of those years. So I've always been very active, and then I decided with the show that I'm going to be doing, I am going to be doing the show in April. It is scheduled to go to Hoxton Hall. I hope
I'm going to come.
Well, I shall invite you, definitely. Yeah. But I decided to couch it in a circus thing. It was all the mono, as I was saying earlier, you know, different, but it was built on things that were fearful. The show is about what's fearful for some people isn't for others, and vice versa. Yeah. And that's what the show is about. And because I'd always had this passion to join a circus and be a trapeze artist, well, I wanted to do all of those things, bareback rider. I said to Gavin, who actually wrote most of the show, and he also taught me trapeze, because he's an actor, but he also did circus work. And I said, I want to play this old clown at the beginning who pretends she's just done a high trapeze act and she's now doing magic tricks. And I then walked out I did an imaginary mime thing in a sort of big pink tutu, like sort of sylphie dress, doing magic tricks and sort of balancing on an imaginary sort of wire on the ground. So it was all mimed. And then Gavin said to me early on, I don't think you should do this unless you do a real trick. Then you surprise them at the end and say, well, what's next? Shall I grow old gracefully or shall I go on? And then do a real trapeze act. I said, but I'm 62. This is when I was 62. I said, I always wanted to be one, Gavin. This is why I'm putting the circus bit in. But I don't think I can do trapeze at the age. He said, well, actually, he said, I think you could. And he taught me, and I did. And so that was the end of the show. So it's a 5-6 minute trapeze act on the high trapeze at the end of the show.
How the hell did you manage to get that in every theatre? Can you manage to get that in all theatres?
Well, it has to be particular theatres that could hang a trapeze. I mean, it couldn't. Yeah. I mean, at Edinburgh, I was in the Edinburgh suite at the Assembly Rooms. I was able to do it there. That was not as high as maybe some of them were. But I mean, it doesn't matter. As long as you climb up to it, you're high. And
did you have a net or anything?
No net, no. Sort of mattresses. No, just me. If I went wrong, I would probably kill myself, but I didn't, because you really learn not to. But the interesting thing is, I did that show for 3 or 4 years. So probably by 2005, I'd stopped doing it. So it was 15, 16 years since I'd done any trapeze. So when we said I wanted, it was again my daughter-in-law who's the actress. She said, I really love that show. Please do it again. It was so special. I said, well, I don't think I'd be able to. This was about 2 years ago. I don't think I'll be able to do it when I'm, you know, if we do it in the next couple of years, I mean, I'm going to be 80. I don't think I would be able to do it now. She said, well, you don't have to do the trapeze act. The rest of the show is brilliant. So you don't need to. I said, I'm not doing it without the trapeze. No. So then Gavin said, well, you better start learning again. So, of course, I've been training again for the last 6-7 months now, and I'm having to keep it up now until next April, because I can't.
I'm very intrigued to know how you keep it up.
And I can do more now than I did 18 years ago. That was because I've been doing it for a long time.
Linda, how the hell do you practice trapeze in your own home?
Well, you can't. That's why I have to go and have the lessons all the time. That's why I have to go. I've got a lovely teacher who used to be a trapeze artist herself. She's much younger than me. Much, much younger. Well, she's your age, actually. Oh. But you look so much younger, and she looks much younger than her age. I said, so why did you stop? And she said, because I could not compete with 20, because she's French-Canadian, with 20-year-olds. And I said, well, I won't have any trouble in my category. Well, she said no. So I told her then that I was nearly, when I started last year, I was going to be 80 and do it. She said, well, it's hard to believe. Anyway, She's taught me. I've been doing some of the things that I did all that time ago, but I've also learnt more. I mean, I could do double what I won't put them all in.
Would you go upside down and round and round?
Oh, yes, yes. I do ankle drops and half gazelles where you hang with one foot over the bar and sort of back and, you know, you fall into these positions.
Even if you do die, what a fabulous way to go. I mean, come on.
Well, that's exactly, that's what I think. Yeah, it'd be worse to maim yourself, but it's a fabulous way to go. But no, I wouldn't do it if I didn't have the strength in my limbs, but I've been doing Pilates and I'm doing that. So yes, I do keep fit.
And you quite tall? You look quite a long person.
Well, I've shrunk, sadly. Mm. I used to be 5'6" because I was the same, and one day, same size as Marnie, my daughter-in-law. I always gauged it by there, and I'm not nearly as tall as her now. And then I had to have being measured for some reason. I think it's when I had this thing on my eye, and then I don't know why they measure you. And they said to me, "Oh, you're not 5'6". No, you're not. You're an inch shorter than that." And I think I may be even more than an inch shorter. I said, "But I don't stoop. How could I have shrunk?"
Yeah.
Of course, it's your vertebrae go down as you get older. You don't notice it happening, but they do. So I'm probably only about 5'4" and a half now.
Gosh,
or 5'5".
You look so fabulous. So what's really exciting is Burkos Women is going to be screened online from November the 19th to the 22nd. It's at 8 o'clock. It's on at 2 p.m. and 8 p.m. Tickets are £10. And to book your tickets, you go to @yours.link.
Yeah. The first performance is £10, and I think it goes up a couple of pounds for the others. The first performance is like a preview, the 19th. Okay. I thought I'd better add that. But yes, I didn't know there were ones at 2 o'clock as well.
Yes, yes, yes. On November the 21st to 22nd, 2 p.m. and 8 p.m. But the great thing is you can sit in your front room and watch it.
Yes, I can. I've already watched it. I'm not sure I want to watch it again. I can't watch. Because I still won't have an audience to see how they're taking it, will I?
Oh, I'll come round and put a mask on.
Oh, well, that's lovely.
Well, look, so fabulous to meet
you. Very welcome.
And masses of luck with the screening. And your one-woman show sounds fabulous. And it's so brilliant to meet you. And thank you so much for coming on to Radio Gorgeous, Linda Marlowe, actor, actress extraordinaire.
But it's so wonderful to have actually talked to you. I've really enjoyed it. And thank you.
It's a pleasure.